This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm very happy now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Paul Barnes. He's film editor, he's collaborator and co-producer with filmmaker Ken Burns. He was supervising film editor of Ken Burns' The Civil War series, and that series is now having its 25th anniversary. It's being aired, the remastered version of it, HD, is being aired next week, Monday through Friday, at 8 o'clock on Channel 5 KNME TV. New Mexico PBS, all the New Mexico PBS stations will simultaneously air this program. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much for having me, Mary Charlotte.
It's great to have you back, and we were talking about this program when it aired, when you were doing a presentation of it at the Lenzic Theater last spring.
Yes.
And I was wondering what it's been like for you now on this 25th anniversary to revisit, to rewatch, and to think about the effect of this very important series on American viewers.
Absolutely. First of all, I'm so excited about the restoration. It's unbelievably beautiful. If you have a high-definition television, you're going to be absolutely shocked at the quality of the images, both the photographs and the live cinematography. It just leaps off the screen. Because it's in super sharp focus, the colors have all been adjusted and corrected. The detail in every single photograph and every live shot is just extraordinary. I mean, it just pops off the screen. And to me, it makes the whole emotional experience of watching the Civil War that much richer. The images are just incredibly extraordinary.
I wanted to ask you, what was the original from which you were working?
We went right back to the original 16mm negative that Ken and our cinematographers, Buddy Squires and Alan Moore, had originally shot the film with back in, the mid-1980s, for God's sakes. It's 30 years old. The film footage is 30 years old to 25 years old. And one of our worries and one reason why we went to the process of restoring it was we were worried about the deterioration of the original negative. And now it's all been scanned to 4K digital files, wonderfully preserved on these computer files, and basically it's going to last for generations, going forward, and we don't have to worry so much about the deterioration of film. 16mm is so tiny, it's so small, it's about an inch square, and there's color separation involved in deterioration. There's fading of the color involved. There's warping of the film footage that makes it hard for it to play back. So we're very, very happy that it's been preserved in this form.
And when it's preserved in this form, I mean, it's a digital medium, so you can make any number of copies and put them in any number of places, so they really can't be lost the way film can be lost.
Exactly. I mean, who knows what the media is going to be like in 15 to 20 years from now. And having it in 4K high-definition computer files allows us to make a new clone, a new copy, exactly 100% the way it looks and sounds now, into any medium that is going to come across in the future.
So were you involved in all of that process of the color correction and the remastering and all of the technical details of that?
Because I live here in Santa Fe, the process was done in New York City. And my associate, Daniel J. White, was the producer of the restoration. But he had never done a restoration before on his own. He had worked with me on some in the past. So I was supervising him long distance. And I have to say that Danny did an extraordinary job. And when he was sending me copies to look at, I was just blown away by the quality of what he was doing with the colorist in New York.
Now, have you ever been able to watch this film series as a viewer, as opposed to as a craftsperson, an editor, a color guy, all of that?
Yeah, well, it's interesting you say that. It's, it's 25 years old. I've occasionally seen it every once in a while in the past. But because I had to check over every single episode for this restoration, it was an opportunity to watch the whole thing all over again 25 years later. And although I was supposed to be looking for technical flaws and color mistakes and things like that, I got so caught up with the story that often I would have to stop and go back and check the technical issues because I was so enraptured by it. And that's what's so amazing to me about it is that it really has held up after 25 years. it's really, I think it's a classic film. I mean, not to pat myself and Ken on the back, but I think it really lives up to its reputation. And the other reason, the other thing that we've noticed over the years is that the Civil War is continually being used in classrooms all across the country, in middle schools, in high schools, in colleges. And it's one way in which a lot of students in this country learn about the Civil War. And constantly Ken and I are running into people, too, who they watched it when it was first broadcast 25 years ago, but now they share it with their families. They watch it with their sons and their daughters. It becomes a family movie night event. And that they're passing their love of the film onto the next generation of kids. And the educational use, in terms of statistics, PBS keeps statistics about this use. And the use of the Civil War has actually increased over the years and not decreased, which really surprises and gratifies us no end to know that educators are still using the film so widely.
I think what's so interesting about it is, one of the things that's so interesting about it is that it weaves together what I, as a school child, found just deadly boring, which is strategy and battles.
Yes.
With these fascinating individual stories that are left over from letters and communications that sometimes the lowliest people wrote to one another, and those just come alive in the film.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, again, a big surprise for me in rewatching it is the quality of the language of those letters and diaries. From the lowliest foot soldier all the way up to Lincoln. I mean, these people just knew how to write and express their emotions, and also to tell stories narratively. The film is so rich in quotations that when you hit a battle scene, and many people, their eyes might glaze over not wanting to know about the strategy and tactics, but the recollections of the soldiers about what was happening are so intense that suddenly you feel like you're in the middle of it. I mean, you're watching photographs or paintings or live shots, but the voices that are conveying those stories from those soldiers' letters and from those officers are just, I mean, it's extraordinary. I mean, you just hold your breath in suspense about what's going to happen.
It's interesting, too, looking at the paintings, because some absolutely first-rate, amazing painters made paintings of these Civil War battle scenes and ships and so on. And so you're having a little art history experience at the same time.
Yeah, no, it's true. Because when the Civil War was photographed, was fought, photography was only 22 years old. And the lenses were very slow, the cameras were very cumbersome. And so for many of the battle scenes, there's no action photographs. So we had to rely on empty battlefields that were taken before the action started, or dead bodies in the aftermath of the battle, or these wonderful artists in the 19th century who did these amazing paintings of the battles that we could pick apart in detail, the way Ken does, of doing close-ups and medium shots and pans and tilts and zooms that allow you to get right into the action and really feel the battle. That, along with a wonderful sound effects track, which really helps to bring it alive with cannons and bullets whizzing by, really makes it come to life for people. In fact, Ken and I have had people come up to us and say, where did you get the newsreel footage of the Civil War battles? And obviously there is none in the mid-19th century.
Because film hadn't been invented yet.
Yes, exactly. But somehow we made people believe that they were watching newsreel footage, which is very gratifying to us.
Yeah, that's quite amazing. It makes you think about the unreliability of eyewitness testimony. It's like, I saw that film and it had a newsreel.
Yes,
from
exactly.
1850 to 1862. So we're talking to Paul Barnes about the Civil War series that is airing on New Mexico Public Television, New Mexico PBS, all of next week at 8 in the evening, a nice kind of dinner or after-dinner activity for people and families. Tell us a little bit about what your process was like working with filmmaker Ken Burns, working as an editor. I mean, it's such a different production and post-production kind of experience than your normal documentary film, because nobody's really, except for the interviews with historians and essentially talking heads, you're not going out and getting action footage. So a lot of the film has got to be just making decisions about the literary content, the letters and so on, the narrative, and then these images.
Yes, exactly. Before we even begin to edit, Ken will not start to edit a film unless he has a really good script. And so the first step in his process is to work with the writers. In this case, it's Jeffrey C. Ward and his brother Rick Burns, who collaborated on the script with him. And I didn't begin to edit the film with my co-editors until we had maybe draft 4 or 5. So they had already really culled through all the material and weeded things out and selected a lot of those letters and diary quotes well beforehand. Then the process becomes working with Ken in terms of what are the best images to use for the individual scenes and how to bring those scenes to life. What are the most dynamic, the most beautiful images to accompany those scenes and sections? What portraits are most telling of Lincoln's expressions in terms of some of the speeches that he's making? What photographs of some of the daily life of the Southerners who were being devastated by the war? What images really portray what life was like for them? Or also with the life of the slaves, which is a big part of the film, many of those images people really haven't seen before. And so to depict what the horrible life of the slave was through those photographs and choosing the right photographs for those moments are an essential part of the process of putting the film together. And Ken was he loves still photographs. I mean, he's a still photographer himself. He was trained in both photography and film when he went to school in Massachusetts. So he's always looking for the emotional content in the film that's going to boost the emotional content in the scenes themselves. And the other thing is the music. The music is key to him.
Well, that's something that I wanted to ask you about, because there's a piece of music that recurs through the film. And, I mean, how early did that come in? One might guess, and I don't know if it's true or not, that music is something that you add in after everything else.
Right. Ken is unlike other filmmakers. Many filmmakers add their score at the very end of the editing process, and they'll use some temporary tracks before that while they're cutting. Ken is the opposite. He has to get the right emotional piece of music for the individual scenes right from the get-go. So when I actually began cutting the Civil War, one of the first things he said to me was that Ashokan Farewell, the main theme of the Civil War, was going to be the main theme of the Civil War. Good friends of his, Jay Unger and Molly Mason, had written that song. And Ken absolutely adored it. And when he heard it and was thinking about this project, it immediately touched him very deeply in an emotional way, as expressing the kind of bittersweetness of the experience of the war. And so every single episode begins with Ashokan Farewell, and then we brought musicians into the studio and did variations on Ashokan Farewell, piano solos or guitar solos, and threaded those throughout the course of the Civil War. So it is the main theme running through the entire series. And the other thing is Ken studiously studied the music of the Civil War. And pick pieces of music like Battle Cry of Freedom, the Battle Hymn of the Republic, Lorena. I mean, so many tunes that were so popular at that particular time. And again, he would work with the musicians to create arrangements of 3, 4, or 5 different instruments playing variations on those tunes that we could thread throughout the process of editing. And we did the music recordings, fairly early in the editing process so that we, the editors, had them on hand. If we would start a scene, I would try placing a different piece of music against the scene and see what kind of emotions were coming out. And once I hit on the right thing, I would start to cut the photographs to the text and to the music. And then Ken was always involved in the process. He would come in and see what I was doing and make adjustments and changes, and that's how we proceeded. But the combination of music, text, and the sound effects with absolutely the right images, that's what makes the films come alive.
Some people thought that the Ashokan Farewell was a Civil War tune, which, you know, obviously I mean, is a contemporary tune, but it was, I guess, through the juxtaposition with the images and with the instrumentation, it
yes.
felt very real.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was written in the 1980s, again, as I said before, by his good friends Jay Unger and Molly Mason. And when they sent him the CD with the tune on it, it just grabbed Ken.
Well, that's one of the things that I think is so interesting about your process and Ken Burns' process, is that no matter how deeply you get into the material, like, let's say you're editing and working with the same images for, you know, hours and hours and days and making decisions, you still have to keep your heart open to the emotion of what happens when you add this instrument.
Exactly. No. The reason why Ken's films work so well is because his whole aesthetic is based on what he calls emotional archaeology. He's not just interested in telling the dry facts and figures of the past. He wants the past to come alive for people. And so he's always looking for the emotional content that's going to allow the audience to relate to it from the present into the past. And so that one individual can immediately relate to a soldier's experience in the war or to a Southern woman's experience in the war in a very direct way that's going to grab them emotionally. And once we grab them emotionally, then I think the history and the story, the narrative, then the facts and figures are they're not dry anymore. Suddenly they're really connected to emotional content because you feel like you're experiencing this history through real people. And again, the actors reading the voices are key to us. You get some really great actors like Jason Robards reading Grant or Sam Waterston reading Lincoln, and they read so beautifully and with such emotion and such depth and such intelligence that you feel as if they are speaking to you. And when we do a long zoom in on Lincoln's face as he does, let's say, the first inaugural speech, all of a sudden it's like you're looking at the emotions and the mind that created this language, that expressed this political thought, that expressed this kind of change that he wanted to see happen to the country as a result of this catastrophe that happened to it in having to have to go to war in order to free the slaves.
There's always, I would think, when you make war movies or documentaries based on war, a tension between, on the one hand, glorifying the war, and on the other hand, beholding its true horror.
Yes. No, it's true. The Civil War was horrific. I mean, more people died during the Civil War than in any of our other conflicts throughout our history. It was a bloodbath, an absolute bloodbath. And the worst thing about it is that it was brother killing brother. I mean, it was Northerner versus Southerner. It was Americans versus Americans. And it makes the horror even more intense. And we deliberately did not try to avoid seeing the bodies on the battlefields. I mean, that is a part of war. There's a major cost. And the only thing that redeems the Civil War is that the cause was so just. It was unfortunate that the country had to come to that crossroads where they had to go to war in order to solve this problem of what to do about the issue of the institution of slavery.
That wasn't even the problem. That came up during the war, right? The original impetus for the war was keeping the Union together, and then after, what was it, a year, Lincoln said, okay, it's about slavery.
No, I'd have to disagree with you on that, Mary Charlotte. I mean, it's really, historians now who study the war, it really was all about the institution of slavery. I mean, this country was founded as a democracy with the institution of slavery still, within its borders. And that was a huge hypocritical disconnect between what democracy means and what our country really was at the time. For years and years and years, all these compromises have been going through Congress trying to deal with the problem of slavery and the tensions between the North and the South over the issue. And it was always never resolved. I mean, it just kept coming to an impasse, one impasse after another. Congress was probably as divisive then in the 1840s, 1850s, as it is now. And a lot of it had to do with the issue of slavery and the Southern culture not wanting to change its economy and the way in which slavery functioned in that culture.
I mean, I was just referring to the fact that the Emancipation Proclamation was made in 1863.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, it was, again, there was a political move by Lincoln to kind of ennoble the cause of the war at that point, because the war was not going the North's way. The war was becoming very unpopular. And by issuing the Emancipation Proclamation and finally letting his soldiers know and letting his people know that this was the root cause of the war and this was the reason why the war was being fought, it really did change the whole tenor of the war. I think most Northern soldiers suddenly felt like they were fighting for a real cause at that point, and that what they were doing was a noble thing.
So you did this film. It came out 25 years ago. It's still very much alive. Do you have a sense? I mean, you were talking about teachers continuing
Yes.
to use it. Do you have a sense of its effect on society and about the conversation of, for example, race in America today?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it's a great conversation starter in terms of dealing with the issues of race in a classroom. This is going to be re-released on a Blu-ray and a DVD as well, and we have actually a DVD extra which shows a teacher using the Civil War in a classroom. And so you see a group of high schoolers who are maybe 10th grade, 11th grade, and the teacher is showing them some of the sections about slavery. And many of the students just have never seen the images. They didn't know how horrible the institution was. You gather from this little DVD extra how much they are learning. And the teacher is constantly asking them questions or having them ask questions about what was life like back then. Why was the war fought over this? Why was there such an inequality with African Americans and white Americans at the time? And so the film definitely opens up major discussions about race in America. And as far as we have come since the Civil War, it's gone in incredibly slow baby steps. And kind of the events in America in the last couple of years that we've been witnessing only, gives the truth to that this inequality and that exists between black and white in this country is still very intense. And there's still a lot to do. And I think that the Civil War helps to open up that dialogue between people, whether it's kids, whether it's adults. But I think, again, it's one reason why we make these films. It's like Ken and I feel deeply that Americans need to know their history. They need to know the roots of the problems that African Americans had in this country through the institution of slavery. They need to know why that Civil War was fought. They need to actually see and hear from these slaves about the horrors of what they had to live through. To start to think about what is the legacy of slavery in America and how much does it still linger in society today in terms of people's attitudes between white and black.
Having completed this project and having done many other films since, has anything in your career equaled the satisfaction of doing this project?
I'm not sure. I mean, it blew our minds when it first came out because it had such a phenomenal response across the country. It's still the highest rated program in PBS history. It's still number one, even after 25 years. No other program produced and broadcast by PBS has equaled it. And the country just, got caught up in this story when it was first broadcast 25 years ago. The response was just phenomenal to us. I mean, we had no idea that it would ever have that kind of effect. And I think then it opened up a great dialogue because suddenly, it was broadcast in 1990. I mean, we were still dealing with racial issues at the time. And I think it still just opened up, that dialogue in an enormous way 25 years ago. And I think it can still do the same thing now.
I certainly hope so. I try not to do this very often, but I do occasionally read the comments after newspaper articles online. Mm-hmm. And when you go to so-called conservative newspapers and read an article about Obama, the vitriolic racism extended toward him and his family and his children and references toward baboons and ghettos and monkeys and mm-hmm. and them calling themselves patriots. And I know that it's not the majority of Americans who feel that way, but it's enough of them that they're everywhere in these online forums.
Right.
And you wonder, how do you reach that segment of America? Whether a film like this, whether they even watch it?
Right. Well, I mean, one hopes that they would be open-minded enough to give the film a chance. And I think when they're able to experience some of the photographs of the lives of the slaves, or to hear one of our actors reading a letter from an ex-slave written back to his wife, who's still enslaved and living in slavery with her son, and expressing his hopes to be able to free her and get her into Northern Lines so that they can become a family again. When you see that kind of empathetic humanity come out of these spoken words and these letters from some of the ex-slaves, it begins to really make you think hard about the suffering of these people, and the love he has for his wife and for his child you know, it's the love of another, one human being for another. It's so common. It's so universal. I think that when people see that, it may hopefully be able to open up their hearts to what this experience of slavery was like for those people.
Paul Barnes is a film editor. He was supervising film editor of Ken Burns' series, The Civil War, which is having its 25th anniversary. It's been digitally remastered and airs Monday through Friday, September 7th through 11th at 8 o'clock in the evening on New Mexico PBS stations all around the state. I want to thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Well, thank you once again, Mary Charlotte, for having me. And I do hope that people will take some time and give it another viewing or a completely new viewing. I think you'll be blown away by what you see.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to Studio X for their technical support and web design.